Athletes like Reggie Bush know what it's like to work through adversity to reach a goal. Visit Adidas.com and watch as your favorite Adidas stars tell their amazing stories of achievement. Enter for a chance to win tickets to see Reggie Bush and the Saints live in action, all at Adidas.com.
Hello and welcome to the GFW Radio Podcastica. This is the podcast for September 11th, 2007. We got the full regular crew of wacky people here today, as follows.
Ryan Scott.
Darren Gladstone.
X-Files.
And Sean Malloy.
Okay.
It was like Enigma for a second then.
Yeah, I don't know what that was, Sean, but
that was a rad song. I listened to Enigma for the lyric. Oh no, that's Pure Moods, man. I listened to it for the lyrics.
Before we move on to other things, an acknowledgement that we just had, or we didn't have it. Sean had it. His birthday.
What?
On 9/9.
Now I feel like I'm at Chevy's or something. And I just stuck
happy
fucking
birthday.
Sombrero on my head.
No, they never sing that song. That one's copyrighted.
Yeah,
that,
oh.
Happy birthday.
No. Olé. What's the GFW happy birthday song?
It's just,
hey, shithead, it's your birthday.
Lol's nerd.
One year
closer to death for you.
There's the GFW birthday.
So, as you pointed out right before we went on, your birthday is the same day as Dreamcast Day.
That's true, man.
That's
put
exciting.
Me on the spot, yeah. And I treated myself to a Dreamcast on that day.
On that very day it came out.
Yeah, and Soul Calibur was a great gift. And one of my friends got me, because I already got the good stuff, he got me, I don't even remember, that's how much I love the game. It was like an airboard racing game.
Did you sell it right away?
We traded it in pretty quick, yeah. But that takes me back. That was one of my first times when I remember the whole pre-order shit was starting to blow up.
Uh-huh.
And there's a Funko Land up the street. I don't know if those exist anymore. It's now, you know, GameStop.
I think they do exist.
Or maybe they GameStop don't. Now.
Oh, they are?
Everything's
yeah.
GameStop
oh,
now.
Shit.
And we went there, and those dudes were telling us, like, you have to pre-order this. If you want to get it, you got to do it. And then there was, like,
well, of course you believed
there was, like, a
then.
Big K, like, in the same parking lot. We walked over there, and I was like, all right, we got it. Let's just go. My friend's like, no, we got to go back and show it to those guys. Runs in the door, like, does a fucking dance by the counter waving the thing. Fuck you! And then goes back out the door. There's like tons of them over at Kmart.
Weird to think there'd be a pre-order thing at all for anything Dreamcast, since you could basically buy a Dreamcast for like $5 now.
Nowadays, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was hot. That,
that was an
awesome
console.
Loved that console.
Love that one.
Still got mine.
So much fun.
I bought mine, actually. I was sort of like the way the iPhone people got screwed last week. I was one of those guys. I bought the Dreamcast for full price like the day before it went down to like nothing.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
There was a lot of...
Oops.
My version of the Dreamcast scam was... That was an era when EB Games gave you the return, generous return policy that said if you, you know, satisfaction guaranteed, if you don't like it in 10 days, bring it back. And so what I did was I got Jet Grind Radio?
Jet Grind
Radio. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Got that, solved it, took it back, and then I got Shenmue, solved that in like 2 days, took that back. Then
you
I
solved
got,
Shenmue?
Yeah,
damn,
I totally
good
did
for
it.
You.
Wow.
I really, I loved it too at the
really?
Time. I was so wow. into it. I remember telling everyone in grad school about like how promising it was for the future of interactive media. Basically.
Wow, so you were talking shit way back then too.
I was.
So you
that
were
was before I decided
to play lucky
a professional
hit.
Career in talking yeah. shit.
But then no, then that string of swaps continued until like I bottomed out on a few really bad ones. Like it was one of the Tomb Raider ones that came out, and then I took that back immediately. And then, but yeah, I went through at least like 6 or 7 games on that for that $150.
I think a lot of people did that at first. I mean, I know I did too. And like after a while, they actually changed the store. I feel like they changed the store policy because people like us were just pulling that.
They
for
did,
so long.
Yeah. The receipt like was just getting longer and longer with the history of like trade-ins.
Next,
hard to please, man.
you started this used game racket. That's
yeah.
all your fault.
So,
so yeah.
Right,
so here we all are.
While we're on the detour, then,
yeah.
On Friday, I went and played miniature golf with Bobito. That's Robert Ashley. Sometimes on our podcast, and you know, we went with our girlfriends, and this other guy, Willis Lambert, came with us. And so, while the women were talking, we were just doing our usual like talking about games in a roundabout way, even though we said, okay, no game talk while we're here. Mm-hmm. And we did it anyway. And so as we're playing, we just started talking about all this. Well, it started when I was they're asking why I was so good, because I want to really brag about my mini golf skills right now. And that's an
that's
excellent
the point of this podcast.
Is that the point of the story? How awesome you are at mini
no,
golf?
No, it's not.
Okay. That'd be okay.
But I'm totally into birthday. It, though. Even they were surprised. They're like, how the hell did you know about this place? Because it's out in the middle of nowhere out in Castro Valley. But it's like an awesome course. They have just like really good technical holes. And
so it's one of those things where they got weird contraptions and shit.
Yeah, but it's like sometimes like a gimmick isn't enough. Like, dude, a good golf. This came up too, man. We were like praising the good. They're like, okay, the good golf hole is like, you know, an unreal level or something. You start off with a geometry and figure it out, and then you make the build plywood. You big the
sure.
toy boat. You build the big plywood pagoda.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Around the hole afterward, or the windmill with the thing. So, yeah, just a gimmick in itself is no good. It has to be fun. So, like, a fun one there would be, like, a giant skee ball scenario, and where, you know, the equivalent of the bullseye is a hole-in-one, and the other is, like,
is this a golf land?
Golfland Golden Tee.
Okay, I go to the one in Sunnyvale a lot. Yeah. Must be very similar layout.
That's a good – that they have some good stuff there. But so, anyway, we're playing, and then I told the story. Now I'm going to back it up. It's going to be recursive or, like, embedded, you know – stories within stories.
Oh,
so
wow,
how meta of you.
We used to like go to Hamlet. This in grad school in Birch Bay, Washington State, up near the Canadian border. We went to this like cheesy little mini golf place, and it was like an old couple made it, and it was inside of a shed. And it basically, when I described it to people, it would be like if there was a tornado and it ripped through a trailer park and just scooped up all kinds of shit and bric-a-brac, and then it like died out. Like the pressure levels like balanced out or whatever, and it just dropped all the shit it was holding, and then some fool built four walls and a roof on it, and then
it was a golf course.
And carved out some holes for it. Yeah, it said it was a golf course. But then the thing that was funny about that, other than the fact that the guy made you stick a thumbtack on the map when you came in and show where you're from and spit your gum out and promise to him that you weren't going to ever raise the club above your knee and all this other garbage, was just random toys and just trash all in this place, you know. So we were saying, we were talking about doing a documentary on that guy, and then we were like, We want to make a mini golf course that tells a story where every hole is part of this big narrative. And then when you play your way through to 18, like you've completed the story. Mm-hmm. And then we just realized that was an awesome.
So it's like an RPG.
It was an awesome metaphor for video games. You know?
So it's a linear 18 hole experience. And then.
Yeah.
Right.
Have some emotional satisfaction.
It's all about getting the ball in the hole, but we got to find some way to tell a story.
Someone's going to make that game now.
Have some side
quests. You shouldn't have spelled that. Someone's going to steal your idea.
Well, Mario Golf was a little bit like that.
But even like, I mean,
well, not really.
At the end of the day, even BioShock is that. You
yeah,
know?
Totally.
I mean,
yeah.
I agree. So. Get the ball in the hole.
True.
So that's why I brought up.
I had a BioShock for the record, didn't I? Well, we're on that tangent.
What?
Oh, yeah, was it somebody had a couple people actually had written us tell us that the that you actually can get to a total auto hack on the turrets, right? It wasn't. I think the camera is no.
Once you fully research turrets and security bots with the camera, you get to auto hack on them.
Right.
There's no auto hack for security cameras, sadly. And then same thing for Etrian Odyssey. They wanted to clarify that. Says the poster wish you could press a button to sell all of a certain item. That poster, of course, was
Soren Johnson.
Right.
And he says, well, you can. I guess he missed the thing that says Y all, which means press Y to sell all of the selected item.
So, no need to be snarky.
Yeah.
So that's this segment's For the Record.
Yeah, that's Department of Corrections.
All right. Should we actually discuss a topic?
Let's do it.
Actually have a game plan?
Yeah, let's have a game plan.
We do have one?
We do have one. Actually, one thing we can talk about, not entirely PC related, but we promise we have important big PC stuff coming up later in the podcast. Somebody go find some. somebody posted, actually it was a website, this has been making the rounds today and yesterday, the top 25 best-selling video games of all time. I don't know where this list first was posted, but the link was sent to me from gunslot.com. This is actually like a gun site. I had no idea what that had to do.
An authority.
Yeah, your gaming authority, gunslot.com.
Pretty much it's NPD and then gunslot.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know if anybody else wants to read these off or I can start or whatever. You got your top 25 best-selling video games of all time. platform, regardless of platform. Have you guys all seen this list?
I've seen it.
Yeah.
I do not have
it. Oh, you have. So we can't play a game. I can't say guess what number one is.
I haven't seen all of them.
Yeah, I would have guessed wrong.
The other thing to go with this list is that it counts pack-in games. So, you know, Super Mario World, for example, or, you know, that it, because it comes with Super Nintendo.
Doesn't count.
It does count.
Oh,
it says total console sales with...
This says represents independent sales of package. Oh. You're right.
Yeah, so it says, for example, packaged with Nintendo's Super Mario Brothers sold 40 million copies. The list includes international sales.
So is that's on the list then?
So I'm guessing
it isn't, because the highest one is 20 million. So no.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
They're not including games packaged with systems.
Very wise, Gunslot or whoever did this.
So what would you have guessed was the number one selling game of all time?
I would have guessed Super Mario Brothers 3.
And that was number two.
Right.
Number one, I mean, it's not really a cheat, is it? It's Pokemon Red, Blue, and Green. That is one game, right? Even though they're packaged separately.
I'm sure some people bought multiple versions.
Yeah.
Which is why it's number one.
Right. 20.08 million of Pokemon Red, Blue, and Green. Number two, Super Mario Brothers 3 for the NES. Number three, PC. What do you think it is?
Is it Sims 1 or 2?
Yeah,
Civilization. It's probably 1.
It's Sims 1. Yeah, Sims 2 is also on the list further down. But yeah, The Sims at number 3 with 16 million copies sold. So that's after two Nintendo games. We have PC. Huh? What do you think about that there, huh? We beat the PlayStation and Xbox, you fucking guys.
And also, the whole list is like handheld dominated.
Yeah, kind of is.
That's interesting.
It actually really kind of boils down to like four franchises. You know, it's like Pokemon Sims,
all over the place.
Mario. Yeah. Number four actually surprised the hell out of me. After The Sims at 16 million, next is Nintendogs at 14.75 million for the DS.
Holy crap.
I knew it did great.
I'm not surprised it's on that list, but I'm surprised it's as high as it is.
Exactly. Yeah. Very high. Then we got another Pokemon at number five, Pokemon Gold and Silver. I'll read this a little faster. Six, Super Mario Land.
That's weird.
It's a Game Boy one.
I miss that game. I never played
portables.
That game was...
Game Boy.
I'll just go ahead and say that game was pretty terrible.
Okay.
All the Nintendo fanboys out there.
Seven, GTA Vice City, in a tie with another Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire. That's three Pokemons in the top seven, for those counting. Then we have Sims 2, also very high up again.
Is that a three-way tie, or is that eight?
Three-way tie between GTA, Vice City, Pokemon, Ruby, and Sapphire, and Sims 2.
So is the GTA one all platforms, or is it counting one?
Just
one?
PS2.
Okay.
And that's 13 million for all those. Then we've got GTA San Andreas at 12 million, Super Mario 64, 11 million, Gran Turismo 3 for PlayStation 2, 11 million. GTA 3, the original, for PlayStation 2 at 11 million. Another Pokemon, Fire Red and Leaf Green at 10.66 million. New Super Mario Brothers for the DS. That's pretty high, huh?
Yeah.
10.52 million.
I knew that one sold a lot, though.
Gran Turismo 1 for PS1. That's kind
of
nice.
A lot of repeats. It just keeps like cycling over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the same franchises here. GTA's all over the place, Pokemon, the Super Mario Brothers. Okay, here we go again. 17 is Pokemon Diamond and Pearl, tied with Super Mario Brothers 2. Those are 10 million each. Then Final Fantasy 7, 19. Finally, we get another PC game at number 20. This is the first one since Sims 1 and 2. Any guesses?
World of Warcraft.
No.
Nancy Drew.
StarCraft.
Nancy Drew, we have a winner. No, it is StarCraft. Yeah, StarCraft at 9.5 million.
Took long enough.
The next one down is World of Warcraft at 9 million, but I find that number suspect.
You find that suspect?
I do, because that's the number of subscribers they have, which doesn't necessarily mean the number of copies sold. I don't know. That one made me go, huh, really? I don't know.
Are you calling this entire list into question?
Maybe I am.
That's where it gets tricky.
Yeah. But anyway, so StarCraft and Warcraft are one after another. They're at 20 and 21.
The other thing, too, this is...
All retail sales.
The sales of games listed below represent independent sales of packaged games.
Yeah.
So we're back to the thing.
The whole list is bullshit.
The thing that PC people we always do is, you're not counting this and that.
Right. Then we have Brain Age.
That's true.
8.61 million.
That one surprised me.
That doesn't surprise me. I would have thought that would have been higher than Nintendogs for the DS. Then Gran Turismo 2 for PS1, Mario Kart 64, Halo 2.
Oh, I was wondering.
Coming in at 25, tied with Donkey Kong Country.
Donkey Kong Country.
What?
Did you happen to print out the comments by any chance?
I did print out the comments, and I'm glad you said that.
Because I was going to say, my eyes are glazing over, like, the list.
Yeah, I can
just,
see you.
Just
yeah.
for, like, the Lou Dobbinauts out there, but
yeah,
I'm into,
yeah.
like, the...
Yeah, no, no.
I'm into the dude that commented, like, fuck Halo 2, it sucks, you fucking cunts.
Yeah,
that's a quote.
I'm really glad that you noticed that, too, because I did, too. And, in fact, I printed out the comments, because it made me feel good, because it was like, okay, this is actually a gun site. It's not a gaming site.
Yeah.
And these guys have, their forms are as shitty as ours. let's see.
They have guns. You got to watch out.
Exactly.
They have guns. Right. But they're about as intelligent. Let's see. Oh, shit. Where's the first page? Hold on.
On the floor there?
On the floor. Is that it? Okay. Yeah. So the whole thing starts out in their forum. Oh, here was the rest of the tie. So the tie for 25 was Halo 2, Donkey Kong Country, Super Mario Kart, GoldenEye, and Pokemon Yellow. Mm-hmm. All tied for 25. So take that, Halo fans.
You know what's sad, though? It started a huge, for all these gun nuts, it started a huge debate over why Half-Life wasn't on there.
Yeah.
And how much better it is than Halo.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, actually, we can skip to that part exciting. Of their forum is, the conversation's all over the place, but at one point it's, what are you, retarded? Halo is garbage. Don't even get me started. You want a real FPS? Get Half-Life and shut the fuck up. And,
like, what does that have to do with anything? This chart.
This chart of sales.
Right. And then that goes on. Let's see. There's something about Galo. Someone turns it into that.
That's clever. Like clever.
Like the H-dub guy.
While you're looking, I'm shocked and kind of
only
happy.
Only retards play Galo. That was the post there.
That's true.
And then after that, the response to that is, only fags call Halo Galo. So it's pretty much your typical internet discourse. Yeah. But, so right under the initial thread, it starts off with, you're supposed to list the number one best-selling last. Because it went 1 to 10,
right.
1 to 25. Yeah, so the guy didn't like that. That's the first comment.
Yeah. Like your
presentation. Then the next one, you are supposed to let other people run their own website, idiot.
What if you've never seen VH1?
And then, no, you are not spastic after that.
I can't wait to see the debate team on this one. Bunch of fucking idiots.
Yeah. I'm glad that no deer hunting game showed up.
Oh,
I'm
that's
surprised.
So true,
what
huh,
what about while you're searching for that, Jeff? I've got a similar instance. What if that sort of discourse is, rather than coming from... just the back and forth is coming from official representatives of Creative, the sound card makers. I'm going to get attention for this, too, since I troll on our own boards all the time. And people say the same thing. You're supposed to be an official representative of whatever.
Yeah.
You're on here trolling. Because I have this bad habit. We call it troll night, where, like, we just go out and troll our own boards.
I was reading one up, and there was some guy posting on there, and I'm like, who the fuck is this guy?
I
kept wanting to respond, and then I found out it was you.
Ryan's all, no, don't spoil it.
I'm not going to say who.
I have an alt account on
yeah.
there that's made
yeah,
to...
Yeah, there's a troll.
It's made
Sean
to,
Elliott is
but
trolling
he's not,
all of
that,
us.
That account,
he's the mole.
That account is made to, like, parody... like the worst element.
It's really good.
That we have on our boards.
You would not know.
No one, I mean, some people know, but most people don't even notice. It would post the most ludicrous fucking thing in the world, and they just keep on going, like right after.
Yeah, if nothing happened.
Oh, yeah. And they'll just, you start a thread, and they'll just keep going. But, you know, other product of Troll Night was the, which I'm very proud of, we can resuscitate it in our GFW thread, was the all Halo 3 vehicles and weapons revealed.
Uh-huh.
And that's
had,
a good one.
Basically a bunch of He-Man vehicles. We took the pictures of those and did write-ups on me and Rory Mannion made all these write-ups about how rad they were. It just got people mad, but it was actually
that's
good.
That's the one with the Ninja Turtles pizza thrower. Too.
That was fun.
That was the best one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's my favorite part of that forum.
Hey, I didn't even get to creative. We'll dig at that afterward.
Okay, and now let me just get, then we'll be done with this. My favorite part was one guy saying it. Somebody dissed Nintendogs, and then the response was, Nintendo's rules, fag. And then the response back was, the guy who was called Fag. So it says Nintendo's ruled Fag. The guy replied back, Nintendo's rules / Fag.
He corrected him.
He corrected him as to say Nintendo's rules signed Fag.
That's how it
was. Nice.
Anyway. Oh man.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
So
intelligent discourse.
On Creative's neck of the woods, I have this because something Awful Forum member screen capped it before they were removed later on. But I don't know if this is indicative of Creative customer service in general, or they had a rogue employee. But basically, people were posting on their forums, on their help and complaint forums, over something that I can relate to. Because when I got Vista, I had the exact same problem. Mm-hmm. It just, the microphone, I couldn't get it to work. And all sorts of buggy sound issues and stuff with my X-Fi card just does not like Vista. So people had these same issues. Ultimately, what I had to do to fix it was, I guess there's, apparently they don't speak English either, but a couple guys like cracked their own solution to it. And that's what I downloaded. And that was the only thing that worked.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think a member, I was off the same podcast we mentioned a while ago. It was one of our readers, actually.
Pointed me to it. Yeah. So yeah, thanks to him again. Okay. I was able to record those skits that appear on our show because I have my sound thing working. But so here's the post from the creative guy. He says, getting tired of these posts. Here's a few things to clarify the situation. One, the drivers will be released when we are good and ready and happy with them. Two, bitching like a 5-year-old won't magically solve all of your problems on the drivers. 3, call us hopeless or whatever else all you like. No one else is going to fix these drivers but us. Demoralizing us won't bring it faster. 4, they're already reasonably working drivers supplied with the card. Legally, our responsibility stops there.
Hold on.
Consider yourselves lucky that we even bother updating the drivers at all.
Wow. Does this guy still have a job?
I have no
idea.
That's
awesome.
5, any more of these derogatory posts and we might well just flush the whole X5 Vista 64 saga to the toilet and move on.
Yeah.
That's okay. Nice.
The
customer is always wrong. Creative Labs.
What happens? A bunch of people come back with various insults, including cons, fuck you, faggots, the usual stuff on the internet, the great, you know, wonderful language. And then the X-Fi, the creative guy, comes back on to respond, and he says, okay. I'd like someone to like my ass, smiley face, emoticon. Hey, Ma, look at the redneck. Nice tune. Try blowing it out your ass.
Are you serious? This is the community manager? This is
nice. How about you suck the nuts out of my sack, you son of a bitch?
Oh, my God.
And a big fuck you back, buddy.
Wow.
Whoa.
Someone having a bad day.
So
unfortunately, screen capped it all for posterity before it was removed.
Yeah, someone tells me that guy's gone.
But that's some seriously next-gen customer service.
Yeah, that really is.
Like, shit. That's the right word, yeah.
I'm going to have to call my buddy over there and find out what the deal is.
That would be the great thing to see, like, at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit if your steak is raw. You're lucky you got it at all, bitch.
There's been plenty of versions of that.
I didn't spit it this time. Yeah.
Like Chappelle's Show, I think, did it. The Copy Center or whatever. Is that... I mean, it's just everyone's dream is basically work in some, like, kind of, like, customer service environment, and then the 5 minutes you have between when you quit and when you have to get out of the facility.
Right.
You get to go hog wild.
And, right.
I did that in various forms, and even I'd come back and help him out.
Yeah,
but
wow, that's horrible.
Let's just assume that
we're
going to
assume that wasn't official Creative Labs corporate policy on those drivers. Say this is one rogue.
You have to. I wonder how often this happens though in the business, because when that's your job to sit there and listen to bitching and moaning, fucking grumbling people.
Yeah. Well, listen. To be honest, on our own website, we've had to put the kibosh on occasional.
Yeah,
managers or community managers, whoever. I mean, not community managers, because there's only one of those.
Mods?
Moderators. Yeah, the moderators or admins who will say something or like, actually, yeah, no, don't.
Yeah. Well, that happened on the official WoW boards. There was one, I can't remember the guy's name. There was one particular community manager who it was like the thread that broke the camel's back, pretty much. It was just an exchange back and forth between the people who were trolling, and then him just posting like the weirdest, like most defensive things, and then suddenly he was gone.
Just finished.
Yeah, he's just gone.
I just imagine
that
being your dog.
Dude, maybe if I disappear
on the boards all day.
If I disappear, that's what's happened to me then, because I had actually a couple weeks ago someone threatened to to tell you on me, whatever, to tell on me to you. Yeah,
about
or to
what?
Everyone, or to your boss. It was like the usual thing. Someone on there with some completely like stupid, asinine, you know, conspiracy theory about how whatever Zip is like indebted to M dollar sign, you know, and, or like whatever.
They got it figured out.
And it just went on forever and ever. And then, like, I think we just started clowning on the dude. And it just got so, I can't believe, you know, this is supposed to be professional. He tried to pull that shit. I'm like, dude, you're going to try to pull the shit on me like this is Jack in the Box and you're going to go tell my manager I didn't kiss your ass? I'm like, well, guess what, man? My job's not to kiss your fucking ass on the board, dude. Yeah. He's like, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, I'll go above. I was like, what are you going to tell Jeff Green on me? And he's like, I'll go above that. And so I was like, okay, yeah, you got this shit down pretty well. I was like, imagining someone in, like, the uppermost echelons of Ziff Davis corporate, like opening a PM through oneup.com. This guy Sean told me to quit posting that the company was sold out to Microsoft. You got me, dude.
Yeah, that happened to me a couple of times when George Jones was the editor-in-chief, and I would get in some flame war over email with some guy, and events, and I'd be nice for a while, but after like the fourth, I'm like, yeah, you know what, fuck you. And then he was like, I'm telling your boss. I'm like, go ahead, we're going to have a good time laughing over you.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. So let that be a warning to any of you out there actually offended by us. If you think you're going to write to our bosses, we're kind of on our own here.
It's especially good stuff when you have been in a position where you would have to fear that legitimately.
Yeah.
Like all my years in the grocery store and stuff. And sometimes it would happen.
Right.
You go into the back room and just like kind of like wipe the sweat off your brow.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
It could happen here. We maybe shouldn't laugh too loudly. We could still get hauled into some jackbooted asshole's office in New York.
Not for the shit that I'm talking about. It was rad.
None of my bosses, I don't mean. They're all super nice.
It was rad.
If you're listening, you're not a jackbooted asshole.
We love you.
I love you, sir. And it's been a privilege to work for you all these years.
Okay. So, well, we're talking internet stuff.
Yeah.
Exclusive review.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
We've been meaning to get to this topic for a few weeks. Or a few years. It always comes around, especially this time of year. You got your big game releases coming out, and we're always searching for cover stories to do, and we've been hit up with review covers, which we've kind of decided, or we decided a while ago around here, not to do anymore.
Quite a long time ago, yeah.
Right. And I'm still pretty happy with that decision.
And it's just, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like where we've been on that. And then it's stories like this that remind you of like, okay, so for whatever benefit you get out of the extra sets of eyes on your first and, being able to brag that you were the first to play the game, the blowback and skepticism from some scenarios like the one that we're about to discuss.
Yeah. So this story was why it's the stories was floating around, the interwebs last week.
Don't say that, Jeff, ever.
Interwebs?
Yeah, that's
isn't
corny.
That what you cool kids say now? Interwebs?
Corny.
Intertubes.
Really?
Now.
I'll talk about that's even
can
worse.
Can I say lolcats?
Hell no.
No. I'm just trying to get hip with the lingo here of this whole web thing.
How are we going to break this? So basically on Gabe Set Watch a while ago, the original story was with an anonymous source and who claimed that while they were an employee of IGN at the time that Prey came out, that it was 2K, you know, and their PR team were saying, hey, you know, if you want this exclusive review, you know, you'll only be able to be the first website to post that you have the review of this and post your review. You need to guarantee us that you can give it a 9 or higher on your 1 to 10 scale. So the source alleged was that Doug Perry, whose position at the time was but something on the equivalent of, I think, for not PlayStation, but maybe the whole thing, the equivalent of an EIC, right?
At IGN. I'm not sure what his title was.
So they alleged, again, this is all, you know, alleged is the word here. So the source alleged that Mr. Perry went and asked the person assigned to the review for his or her, you know, for his actually take or guess what the score would be.
I thought they asked, you know, was there anybody here who felt comfortable, who thought they liked the game enough that they would be comfortable
giving it this kind of
score.
I would have to reread the original story because this is the follow-up story that I have in front of me now. So basically, after all that, you know, of course, it created its own minor internet stink. But so Doug responded, you know, on the same site and to the story. And I want to read some of his response. So He said, here's what happened. I entered into several phone call conversations with PR director at 2K Games. The content of our discussion was about whether my former company, IGN, should get the exclusive review for Prey, which was the biggest game of the summer of 2006. Clearly a dry summer. IGN has always been keen on attaining exclusive reviews. The tricky part of the equation is to get exclusives on games that we like and that got traffic. And that's a big, if not the biggest portion of the driving force behind media sites. They want to drive traffic to sell ads to make money while performing the journalistic matter of entertaining and informing its readers. So he continues that...
So that's all fair so far.
Right. It's difficult to gauge whether a game is worth getting an exclusive on, and it is a sensitive matter, but for anyone who has been an editor in the entertainment business, negotiating exclusives happens all the time. In this situation, the PR person wanted to know a range on what we would score the game so she can make a decision on whether or not to give us the exclusive. Part of the PR person's job is to look for an outlet that he or she thinks really likes the game and then hope they give it a good score. In this case, and it's not unheard of, the PR person wanted to know the score beforehand. We didn't have the score yet because the writer at hand, Tom McNamara, an excellent writer and reviewer, hadn't finished the game. Even if I'd known the score and Tommy had finished the review, we could not have given out the final score, but we would have provided a range of scores. Okay, so... moving on, he says, there are several phone calls I felt 2K was being assertive, or you could say aggressive, but I decided to gauge whether the game was worth getting the exclusive on, and I was persistent about it because I wanted to make a decision on whether we should reschedule our front page, get the artwork, and go through the motions of making this our top story or not. More importantly, I wanted to know whether the game deserved an exclusive. The whole issue brought up by your source is that a game's score shouldn't be discussed with the PR side prior to completion because that somehow breaks the code of ethics. I don't share this opinion. There's nothing wrong with talking to the staff members about how good a game is, how one should score it before it's reviewed, and whether it should be a top story or not. What bothered the source is that I was being pressured in providing a score before the game was completed. But having been in the business for 13 years now, I felt I could handle the pressure, and this is in quotes from 2K Games. So to wrap up his comments, let me see. Okay, let me just continue here, because actually this is all pretty important since we're into it. Tom didn't know the score because he hadn't finished the game, so I said, Tom, what do you think of this game? How would you score it now, and if so, what would you honestly give it? I needed to know your honest opinion because we might have an exclusive here. The themes here are clarity and honestly. The emphasis on the conversation wasn't by any means to pressure anybody into scoring the game higher. IGN never did that. The point was to gauge whether we could determine how good the game was and whether it was worth getting an exclusive on. This way I could provide a range, for instance. The game is between 7 and 9, which would then help the publisher decide whether they wanted to go with this or not. So there's a lot of repetition here, but basically he says that, you know, they ultimately refused the exclusive, as did 1UP.com, which he notes. And that looking back, Prey was a tempest in a teapot. IGN scored the game a 9, 1UP an 8-1, and GameSpot a 7-5. I'd say that now the score should have been somewhere between a high 7 and a low 8 at best. At the time, less than a year after Xbox 360 launch, Prey showed off some great graphics, offered some cool physical puzzles and intriguing alien subduct Native American concept. In hindsight, which is always 2020, Prey was only pretty good, offering mediocre enemy AI, a story that was cooler in concept than execution, and rough and tumble multiplayer gaming. That's interesting to say that he would give it somewhere around a low eight, but that it's, you know, mediocre. So I felt that Tommy overscored the game, but it was his game to review, and his opinion shaped it. Reviewing a game is an art, a subjective affair, not a science. There was no wrongdoing, ethical misconduct, and no big conspiracy. The matter was simple. So that's basically the thrust of the story. I mean, you can go and find the rest of it on there, and the title of the story is mere ignorance with, you know, the IGN capitalized. So I don't know. I mean, we can go from here and say, you know, how we wanted to respond. But first off, what struck me in that was that, you know, no offense to Doug, I mean, I understand where he's coming from, but it's constantly saying, you know, this, we are certain of our integrity. We know that none of this is influencing us and this is fine. But that leaves open the matter of seeming impropriety, which you can never prove otherwise, right? I mean, and so it's also, you know, when you're talking about good, you know, journalistic practice, it's, I believe it's good journalistic practice to avoid that. But more so, I think it is especially, you know, there is, you know, a great deal of seeming impropriety because if you are a reviewer, say, for example, you know, it's me, Mm-hmm. And I'm reviewing it, and you're my boss. And I know that it's in our site's interest to have this exclusive, to mm-hmm. have the first review on this mm-hmm. game, because it's going to get us hits.
Right.
Whether or not we love the game or not, people want to read about it because it's been advertised, it's been discussed. And so in the back of my mind, even if you never say, Sean,
yeah,
I need this game to get a certain amount for it to be on here, I understand that that's the case. And I uh-huh. know that if I'm alone, if I take a chance and say, wow, maybe I'm just a harsher critic of this game than anyone else in the office. Maybe I shouldn't trust myself. Maybe it really is closer to a 9.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are very real, and I don't think that is, you know, that's a situation that you can just dismiss by saying, oh, well, we're
I think of giving it to someone who I think might score higher. I mean, what if I were to say, huh, yeah, Sean's kind of tough, and he's a little bit cynical. Maybe I'll give this to somebody else who might give it a higher score.
Yeah, and that's there too.
Which I don't believe he did. I mean, I think he has a mostly defensible position there, especially since they ended up not getting the exclusive, right? I mean,
right, and
it all ended up being moot anyway. But yeah, probably you just don't want to go there at all, right? You don't want to even just leave it open to misinterpretation.
And another consequence, I mean, I totally agree with that. And I think that, like, I would not want to be in that situation. And I know that depending on the person, I mean, we shouldn't impose that pressure on someone. You shouldn't have that on your mind as you're critiquing a game.
Right. Right.
I don't believe that that's something that you should be, a thought you should be entertaining.
Right. If someone came to me and said that, you know, I'm just trying to think of a similar situation. It doesn't entirely apply, but let's say I knew that it wouldn't be a magazine cover, but let's say I knew that something great would happen if we scored this game great. It would behoove me not to say anything to the person who was reviewing that game. I should not forward that information to the person whose job it is to review it.
Right, and the pressure on them for that.
Right.
But that's another thing, is that I think, you know, Doug says that, you know, angling for exclusives and negotiating exclusives just a general part of the business, and that is true. What's not true, though, is, you know, exclusive reviews or angling for exclusives with any kind of conditions imposed mm-hmm. on them. When we get exclusive cover stories and things like this, there are never any conditions. Like, I mean, the conditions might be, yeah, well, if we give you all this first look at this, we expect it to the image of the game and the name to appear on your cover,
mm-hmm.
right? Or
we might promise a certain amount of pages.
Or a certain amount of pages. Say, hey, we need at least 8 pages or mm-hmm. something if we're going to do this. Otherwise, you know, mm-hmm. we can go here because they're offering us 12.
Sure.
But that's not the content insofar as, like, you need to provide us with a certain number of quotes that we could use for marketing. You need to guarantee us that it's going to be, you know, like, overwhelmingly positive in tone. Or that you're going to make any claims that, you know, will be the hottest game of genre X, you know, in this season. And that's those are kind of similar to saying, here's what the score is going to be. But the other, you know, side effect of all this, I think, is for the audience, is if you know that at least in some circumstances, see, what happens is this story, I believe, diminishes the value of an exclusive review all around. Not specifically this, but this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it means now is that you're going to wonder, well, if I see an exclusive review for something, was it negotiated under circumstances similar to this one?
Right.
And does that then mean that every time you see an exclusive review, it's basically going to be the most enthusiastic right. and overwhelmingly positive
right.
that the company could arrange to have? And then as a consumer, how helpful is that to you?
Mm-hmm.
If you're just looking at the review for a buyer's guide, right? If you're looking on a critical level, I think it answers itself too. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
this is why the
world's biggest fan of Game X has to say about it. You know? I mean,
I think that's why we stopped doing them. You know, if that's not the number one reason, it's the number two, was that, you know, to avoid any kind of pressure or whatever or hassle from the game company to like the game more than we normally would, you know, or just the perception that we might. You know,
or yeah, other, you know,
there's
relationship
a lot of
stuff. Yeah.
Right.
So say, for example, you ordinarily consider that you had a good relationship. And when we say we have a good relationship with the company, that means that we just, things seem fine. We communicate well with one another. But what if, say, for example, you got an exclusive review for Game X and then the company thought, they took it personally, hey, we don't like this. And then mm-hmm. comes time and you want to do a first look, you know, preview type story on something else. Then are they going to be like, well, we don't want to give it to them because they shit on our last game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just like... It's
obviously, they want a good review. I mean, that's kind of a duh. If we put the game on the cover with a review, yeah, I think even if you... The expectation, just because it's on the cover, is this must be good.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, of course.
Any reader looking at it isn't going to think, wow, they put this on their cover and they gave it a 2?
And the
I mean, when has that ever happened?
Generally... Why would you do that?
Yeah. We generally, it's not a problem. Covers with very average scores.
Back when we did them.
Right.
Yeah.
In many cases, you're hedging your bets by doing this, and you don't really have to worry about, you know, coming away with it with a black eye, coming away from it with a black eye, because you only consider a game for a cover review when you've played various early versions of it, and you're already like, okay, this is pretty cool. Like, and this is also, more importantly, this is very popular to the extent that a review of an exclusive review of this will sell this magazine or will sell this website for clicks and views and stuff. So 9 times out of 10, I think it's not a problem. I mean, you get it. It probably is a great game. It gets a great review. Doesn't look so bad. But hey, we know there are exceptions to it. There are definitely exceptions to it. And even when it's a fine shade, when, you know, I mean, when he's, you know, splitting hairs between an 8 and a 9, to the point where he's saying that an 8 is like so-so, and the 9 is...
That's a whole other conversation.
You know, I mean...
Yeah. And then the other part, too, is like a lot of this, the times, you know, when we've been in the situation where these type of exclusive reviews have been offered to us, it's coming with a set of... you know, the circumstances in which we would have to review it are ones we're not comfortable with, either in terms of having to do it at their offices because the code is you know, is being squirreled away, or probably worse is that the game has a heavy multiplayer component, and by doing it so far ahead of time, you're playing it before the gaming community has actually seen it yet or playing.
Right.
So you're talking about multiplayer aspects that you don't know shit about. Because basically you're playing it with a bunch of the guys who made the game in their office. You know, they could do anything there to rig the experience. And even if they're not rigging it, you're still not getting a real-world experience.
That's an especially important point for PC games, too, because I think with reviews, the traditional notion is that multiplayer content is like the bonus material. So, you know, you say if you spent 30 hours or whatever playing the main game and then there's a multiplayer component, you might play it an afternoon in a session with some people that the company with some QA department people, you know. Now, when the game is an MMO or when the game is like something like Quake Wars or Battlefield that are, you know, it's based on, you know, the multiplayer experience, you're really, again, it kind of goes back to, I don't think you're really offering an in-depth look on the consumer report side of things, and you're especially not on the critical side of things because it's just not enough time. I mean, you can go in and make a few generalizations, you know, like say if I had to review Team Fortress 2 based on, you know, a couple hours of playing at a press party or something, you know, be like, yeah, the spy was kind of fun and this and that, but it's like, give me a break. I mean, as someone who's played that game for years, I know
I can tell
damn
you
well that you start to understand the game and it's both its flaws and its, you know, accomplishments and its triumphs.
Well, I can tell you a non-review anecdote of a game that was totally different at the company than it was in real life. And that was The Sims Online. When Robert Coffey and I went to see this game when it was early on in its development years ago, it was being played by guys like Will Wright and his associates, who are all super smart, funny, creative people. And the things that they were doing inside that game themselves, the ones making the game, was really neat. You know, I was like, wow, they created this whole universe in which you could make these really funny rooms that do this, that, and the other. Because they're super smart people and they were invested totally in making this game look cool. But when the game actually came out, when you had real people in there playing, it turned out to be a disaster. It was just like a large chat room, right?
No one makes
real people are not Will Wright. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Will Wright is not a real person. He's some kind of alien brain. So that was an example to me of a multiplayer game that was all about the review had to be based on the community. It was nothing without that. That's all that game was. And the community actually was retarded. So no offense if you still play that game. You probably personally aren't a retard, but the other people are. But that's definitely the case with Battlefield 2 or whatever. If you're playing it in advance for your exclusive review on EA servers, internal servers, you're not playing the game. That's not the game that the rest of us are playing.
You know, another one you're going to be seeing soon, like we just got in code today for enemy territory, Quake Wars,
right.
Which is like, you know, like a late beta or whatever, which, you know, of course, we're not going to review it off of that until we play the live version.
Right, we could rush and say, hey, we can make it in
someone's
the issue
going
that we're
to.
I guarantee you, you're going to be seeing reviews of that in other publications based off of that code.
And those are bullshit reviews because, yes, the gameplay mechanics are going to be the same. So you could strictly say this thing works this way, this is cool or not. Mm-hmm. But when your entire experience revolves around your interaction with other people, I just don't see how you could come up with a real score there.
The challenge for us, though, is saying that, okay, we believe in all these things,
okay,
but we have to have an audience to whom these very same things are important to. Because otherwise, because the assumption in all these scenarios is not that our ultimate priority is to put together, you know, a very concise and penetrating review or analysis of something, or it's not to direct someone to the best buying decision or something. It's to get them to click our thing or to buy our book just because we can say we were the first in the door on something. And if, as an audience, I mean, we know that that works. It's a lucrative strategy.
Yes.
And sometimes, I mean, the debate is always for us. I mean, we're shooting ourselves in the foot by not... We could rush this review. I could go and play this thing tonight, you know, and come back. And I won't look like an idiot if I did it. I mean, I'm playing the debate and stuff. But at the same time, I will not personally feel like I'm the authority that I'm pretending that I'm
Well, we know that
be,
we have plenty of plenty of our competition is willing to rush right in where we won't and say, fuck yeah, we'll do the exclusive review because we just say no. And who's right and who's wrong there? I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
just,
we are shooting ourselves in the foot.
And they're definitely not wrong. I mean, if you're the audience and that's what you want, I mean, you can't go wrong. I mean, you're serving an audience, you know. But so it's like we're kind of like begging, hey, if this stuff is important to you, then let it be known.
Yeah, I guess let us know. That's a good subject.
Otherwise,
for the
forums. We could hook you up some reviews tonight.
Yeah, we'll do some exclusive reviews of all the beta code we have. And we'll be first.
Yeah.
Exclusive scoop review.
Okay, so maybe we should take a break and come back on a little less serious note.
Sure.
That sounds like a good idea.
We'll come back with some comedy hijinks.
Hey,
yucks galore.
Three, two, one.
You're the best around.
Listen to EGM Live, the weekly podcast for Electronic Gaming Monthly, available every Monday for download at egmlive.oneup.com or podcast.oneup.com or the iTunes Music Store.
Sweep the lake!
Sweep the lake, Johnny.
Sweep the lake!
We're back!
Hey, I know how to start it.
Yes, sir.
How to come back into happiness.
Yeah.
Check out Darren's face.
Oh.
Here we go.
What's wrong, Darren?
Nothing.
We need to record another GFW radio promo sometime.
Yeah.
Because they've been repeating for a long time. In light of the classic, like, you know, walking over your mom's ass. But I just thought of this.
I like that the rap still gets quoted online. That makes me happy.
Yeah, it's your stardom.
Yeah, it's my big rap. Gotta,
I think the
they
next
say
one,
old Jewish white guys can't rap.
The next
There's
one,
some proof.
Instead of saying it's the sound of us walking over your mom's ass.
Uh-huh.
I want to say that your mom's ass looks like two pigs squabbling over a milk dud.
Oh man.
You need to visualize.
I don't want to visualize.
I don't want to. Just wriggling.
This isn't quite FUPA level bad.
I'm sorry,
I missed on the FUPA shit last week.
That was a reverse FUPA. Dude, the milk dud's what makes it, though.
Yeah, it makes it or something.
Yeah.
Makes me ill. Welcome back.
I told you I could bring it.
Thanks for bringing it back to a happy place.
So what you been playing?
Well, I've been playing, thanks for the segue. I've been playing...
FUPA.
I got on the Call of Duty 4 beta on Xbox Live. So I've been playing a bunch of that.
Oh, yeah? Why is that not on PC?
Yeah, I don't know. I was going to bring that up. Why is it not on PC?
Well, Call of Duty had originated on console. It just makes sense that, you know, that they would cater to the console.
it wasn't really much of a PC game ever.
Yeah, no one ever wanted to play it on the PC. Yeah.
Fuck you, Activision! Just kidding. I love you guys.
Box
then I wonder why I have bad relations with the...
Yeah.
Why don't the PR people return my calls?
So you're playing it? How is it?
It's actually a lot of fun. Looks pretty great. As we all know, it's in modern times now. There's some, like, vague Arabic scrawl on the walls as you run by these, you know, abandoned buildings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They got a nice kind of leveling up system going on. Honestly, I got to say, it's just on the multiplayer side, I'm not seeing a lot that it's going to sound very snobby PC. This is why I'm hesitating with my words. I feel like we've done this before already with this game.
That's how shooters go. I mean,
yeah,
you got guns.
I mean, I was waiting to be blown away because, frankly, it did look amazing what we saw at E3. Mm-hmm. And this multiplayer beta, don't take all this with a grain of salt. The game could be great. Yeah. But what I saw in this multiplayer beta seemed very kind of run-of-the-mill, I got to say.
Infinity Ward's Call of Duty multiplayer games have always, I would say, been run-of-the-mill technically.
Yeah.
If you list the bullet points or anything, although this time they're working to go beyond that with the whole persistence and, you know, rank and perk system.
And the ranking system so far is cool. I like it.
The reason why they've worked is because, despite the fact if someone say, hey, well, what's this game about? You know, you can name off the modes, and if they're not literally taken from other games, you'll find something perfectly analogous in every other game. Mm-hmm. But the response, the feedback you get from the weapons and the feel of things make it work really well.
Mm-hmm.
And they do, it's just night and day if you compare it to like some of the previous, like at the time, the multiplayer for some of the Medal of Honors compared to Call of Duty 1 multiplayer or especially United Offensive, which I was a big fan of, and Call of Duty 2 multiplayer. I mean, it's really simple. You just have an assortment of guns. You run around the map and you shoot dudes.
Right.
But the feedback was great. I mean, you hit someone. It felt like they're accurate and exactly the way you'd expect them. They're lethal to the way that you would expect them to be. Mm-hmm. And that was all very important. You know, when I was talking about like Medal of Honor last week and about how it kind of defies your expectations by, you know, you hit someone in the throat with like a rifle round and then he kind of just does the jack-in-the-box job. I mean, it's like the opposite of that. It's like you get your, like, boom, there's your satisfaction.
Yeah.
And you go on. So they've been fun for that reason.
Yeah. I've definitely had a good time. I just haven't been blown away. And I should also say that I'm equally biased by the fact that this was really my first time playing, my first experience with Xbox Live with the headset in multiplayer.
Oh, man.
So,
that's
yeah.
Not good.
So
that's
I good wasn't shit. Quite expecting that. And so that has nothing to do with the game itself, really. And so I shouldn't hold Infinity Ward or Activision or the game, you know.
Right.
Shouldn't hold that against him. The fact that
you're just talking about
a bunch
how you don't know.
Calling me a retard.
You're just talking about how you don't know a game until you play it with the community. So there's
well,
your
community. Yeah, there you go.
You're just mad because you couldn't be like, I'm fucking Jeff Green. And they're like,
yeah.
They're like, who's that?
Well, like, considering GFW. My tag is CGW Jeff, I wasn't exactly playing anonymously.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You might as well be. If you're playing Xbox, CGW doesn't mean
that
shit.
Doesn't mean
it
shit.
Might as
you're
well
right.
be AFK Jeff or something.
Yeah, no, you're right. But there was just a whole lot of, I'm going to put a cap in your ass, fag. Yep. You know, all day long when I was playing. It's like, there's only so much of that you can take when you're
when Gears of War first came out, remember I said the Xbox Live headset's the stupidest thing you could put on your head, the side of the shotgun barrel. you're finding that holds
there
true.
You're learning all about it.
Yeah.
First
so I feel a little bad that I came off kind of dissing the game because, you know, that was just my experience with the multiplayer beta so far. But
so you're probably just dissing the experience of being with those people.
I think that is what I'm dissing, in fact.
It's like being on the, would you describe the experience as being like visiting the guns lot message board in the discussion?
It kind of is, yeah. It made me think like, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play Call of Duty 4 single player. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I'm curious about some of the higher end stuff. I'm not sure if you noticed it, but the way that the airstrikes work.
Oh, I did see
so,
that.
So, you know, you go on a spree and you get enough, like, consecutive kills in a time frame to call in an airstrike. After that, you get, you know, another three or five more, and then you can call in an attack chopper.
Yes, but I did see that happen
my
with
worries,
my teammates.
Because of the way that game's spawn system, I've heard people say, that, you know, yeah, that it's just the way it always has been. It's basically based on proximity and team. So, wherever the biggest clump of your surviving teammates are is where you will spawn. And then always in, like, you know, there's, like, maybe, like, 8 or 10 various areas that you can go through. But they will be – it will pick the one of those 8 or 10 based on proximity to the greatest amount of surviving teammates. But the consequence of that was always hey, I see three dudes over there. I'm going to throw my fucking grenades and shit because people are probably going to be appearing right next to
sure.
them, and I'm going to get some kills.
Yep.
And now you add to that the ability to throw in airstrikes and stuff instead of your Stielhandgranat, and then you get like, you know, 10 kills off of that, and then the 10 kills give you the next rank, which is the helicopter, and you get some more kills off of that. I'm just – this is just hypothesis mm-hmm. here, but I'm worried about that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's always going to be people exploiting those things and going for the cheap kills. And
yeah.
It was great listening to everybody talking about camping and all that. It's like, wow, man, stuff just never changes.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what game, what platform, what year. It's all guys talking about camping each other.
Same old shit.
Yep.
Camping in those kind of games is annoying, too, because depending on the game I mean, that's the problem with going too lethal with any of your weapons is you create an environment where you don't want to do anything but lay down the moment you spawn and then, like, mm-hmm. shoot the first guy stupid enough or, like, impatient enough to move. A lot of the Ghost Recon multiplayer ended up that way. I mean, Ghost Recon Grot 2 on Xbox, if you played a map and you enabled sniper weapons or whatever, it's like, yep. okay, you spawn, lay down, maybe crawl a little bit,
yep.
and then the first guy that's stupid enough to get up and try to run somewhere is dead. And then he waits the rest of the round specking a bunch of people laying down. It's like a goddamn slumber party with guns. So bad. I know, if you played shooters, you know that experience.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to prevent because you don't want that. That's not fun.
No, you don't want that at all.
That's fun if you're one of the guys sniping.
Yeah. But the thing in Call of Duty, the reason it doesn't work, I should say, is that they got the kill cam, which was a great introduction to the genre, in that you can, instead of wondering, like, who the fuck did that?
Yep.
Then you just get to see the movie of them doing it. And yeah. I guess now, because you have all those other power-ups like Juggernaut and things that give you extra stamina and extra endurance, mm-hmm. and so you're really wondering, like, dude, I just get that guy at the full clip. Why is he not dead? What is this guy hacker? Because that's mm-hmm. the ultimate thing, is like, yeah. is it a hack? Well, yeah, then you can at least look and see what power-ups he had equipped and yeah. see what his loadout was and say, okay.
Yeah, I was watching the kill cam a lot in the Call of Duty 4 beta because I was dead a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So I kept watching the kill cam. And actually more than watching the other guys and what they were doing to kill me, I was just more like ashamed of my own performance. I was like, watching myself play through their eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm watching myself like jump at a wall.
Did you just know, look
like
ridiculous?
Not doing anything or switching weapons. I'm like, oh, man. Like, if I'd be rounding the corner seeing me,
yeah.
you'd be like, nice.
Yeah,
easy kill.
And your name, you notice it's the same guy. Everyone's like, pro tip, go for GFW, Jeff exactly. Green for easy money.
Right. Noob in the southeast corner.
Yeah.
That was my experience. That was my weekend gaming. That plus Company Heroes. I went back to play the original game so that I could play the
Opposing Fronts.
Yep.
So we're still going to have to hold off on the Opposing Fronts talk until we get some games going.
Here. Yeah. Company Heroes, great game, though.
I know I've been playing enough tough of that game when I'm thinking, you know, the classic examples of, you know, when you see Tetris, like, pieces and tiles of the bathroom and stuff mm-hmm. that you've been playing a game so much.
Yes, yes.
Well, I heard, like, a noise at my door in the middle of the night, and I woke up. And then I visualized myself laying mines at the front door, but in the interface of Company of Heroes Opposing Fronts before I started laughing myself.
Wow.
I was like, what the fuck, dude?
What's happened to you? Not with Company of Heroes.
Not with Company of Heroes. Well, WoW, obviously.
Wow. Like
Final Fantasy Tactics.
Really?
I don't know why.
You would dream it?
Yeah, I had dreams about that one.
Freaky. Yeah, Tetris was the classic, though, right? Pieces yeah. falling from the sky.
And it was pretty easy to get that with Lumines. And puzzle games are really, you know, because it's nothing but staring at patterns for so long, you get, you know.
Yeah.
Like, even everyone point out, we have these chairs in our lobby here, and they're exactly, you know, because the blocks shape and color, well, not the shape of the chain. Well, they do. It goes between round and square. But their color patterns change with each level in Lumines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the chairs we have in our lobby are pieces from the game. Like 100%, you know, the red circle with a white box
that's
around
really
them
funny.
And the reverse of that.
I think I've ever looked at those chairs that
one. Yeah, when that game came out, a lot of us pointed it out. We'd be like, uh-huh, true. We just like, you know.
Luminous lobby.
I didn't have the visual stuff, but like, I know, like, after playing like Bioshock for way too long, whenever I hear, like, you know, that security alarm bell goes off,
mm-hmm.
I was hearing that everywhere.
Think mm-hmm. your Hot Pocket's done.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ryan, you playing anything?
I finally got around to playing some Guild Wars Eye of the North this weekend.
Oh, and how was that for you?
Was
it magical?
Surprisingly brief.
It's surprisingly brief.
I finally got around to kind of starting in on it on Saturday.
Didn't you say you played all weekend?
I didn't play, like, obsessively for, like, you know, 16 hours a day per weekend. But
how many hours this weekend did you spend playing?
Maybe 8 hours a day.
I just wanted to establish that surprisingly
laid the groundwork
means like I didn't quite need to break out the poop sock.
Okay, well, right.
So is it 16 hours?
It's like eight being pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's my estimate anyway. And this game is very, very, very short. I would say that the campaign content, which, you know, every Guild Wars game is sort of like a linear story that has a start, middle, and end. And you can finish this in a weekend.
You're done. Oh, wow. So you're done with the whole campaign?
Yeah.
Is it, like, reduced price? I mean, is that, like,
it's the normal Guild Wars game is $50, and this is $40.
Mm-hmm. Isn't this for a high-level campaign or no?
This is for established players only. You have to already.
So we can't say you just ripped it because you're so good and your character's so powerful and mighty.
So it was actually four powerful characters.
It's actually four. Yeah, it's like Burning Crusade, except
Wrath of the Lich King, you mean?
Or Burning Crusade.
Yeah, sure.
But I would estimate the total amount of campaign content to be maybe about 25% of. Like a normal Guild Wars game.
Oh, wow.
That's like a liberal estimation.
Now, did you play like through everything, even all of the stupid side quests and things?
That's the other thing. The side quests, you know, those are extra. I haven't done a lot of that yet, but what I have done...
Ryan, what you don't understand is that this expansion's made for the player who enjoys questing.
Oh. Okay, so I've heard you,
that's
Sean.
That's what you don't get, yes.
I've heard you talk about like rep grind and WoW.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that means you are trying to grind out faction points with various peoples in order to get rewards.
Correct.
Right?
This is something you do not a weekend after you get Burning Crusade, but months after.
That's pretty much what all the extracurricular content in Guild Wars is geared toward, from what I can see. Because you have, you know, instead of having like tons of skills for all of the different professions, they have like this set of like core like profession neutral skills, and those skills get better as you gain faction with all of these races. And you're not going to get your faction to the highest levels just by doing quests. You have to go out and kill monsters, kill more monsters,
which wouldn't be so bad, except Guild Wars has established itself as being the MMO where you don't need to do that, right?
Pretty much. Yeah, that's it's very strange to see that in this game,
right,
to like this extent.
I remember last time when I saw it, they were talking about how the crux of it was like dungeons, like really D&D style dungeon crawls is the way you were couching it. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, like the one interesting thing about the way the campaign flows is that they've kind of abandoned the whole like tiered reward structure of the different missions, and they've replaced it with like these dungeons that you just go through. You get like this static reward and you move on. But there's not a whole lot.
So you don't sound that thrilled.
It's kind of let me down.
Uh-huh.
You know? Christing.
Are you going to keep playing? Are you going to keep going?
We'll see.
How many hours are you up to now?
Total?
So that sounds like, what, an eight?
Well, I don't know about that.
That's my FUPA for this podcast.
We need to know your score. We need to know your score ahead of time.
I'll give you a range.
For the exclusive review.
Yeah, give me the range, dude. Give me a range between like...
Between 9 and 10.
Between 8.9 and 9.2.
Yeah, which are you going to go for?
And then the other big thing about this expansion, this is one of the big selling points that they've made a big deal about all through its development, is this location called the Hall of Monuments.
Yeah.
Where ostensibly this acts as like a gate between Guild Wars 1 and Guild Wars 2, where you will be able to memorialize your items and accomplishments.
No doubt.
And then your Guild Wars 2 characters will get some sort of bonus based on that.
Uh-huh.
But like in order to memorialize these things, like, you know, you can't just put your hero characters on this one monument. You have to have ran through a bunch of the extracurricular challenge missions over and over so you can get their armor upgrades. Only then can you place them.
Oh, okay.
And you know...
Huh. It's like grinding to Exalted in World
only,
of Warcraft.
Only the endgame weapons from this expansion may be added, not any of the weapons you may have gathered before. So it's like there are all these these barriers to using this thing?
Well, they want to make it. It sounds like it's an extra perk for those who are like the most committed.
But it's like a monument to like your poop socking, as Sean would say.
I'm just waiting to transition into the fact that you revealed to us earlier that your girlfriend's trying to turn you into cosplayer.
That's a pretty solid transition there. Yeah.
Your transition was coming later, but
cosplay, right, here comes. You got poop socking, dude. They're like,
I guess so.
Siblings.
So what's this, Ryan? You're becoming a cosplayer?
Oh well, we were talking about Ren Faire. Well, how did that come up?
Well, it came up because this past weekend after I came back from GDC.
Oh, you saw Bill Roper's band play at Ren Faire.
Bill Roper's band was the Poxy Boggarts was playing at Ren Faire. So I happened to be driving, going past on the way back to San Francisco. Figure we check.
That's
it out.
A damn coincidence, right there, though.
Well, no, he gave us the invite. Well, no, he gave us the invite. I spent the weekend down south.
It was a timed coincidence.
But it's just like I'm not used to hearing the sentence like. So I just happened to be driving by the Ren Faire.
Bill Roper happened to be.
I was in a neighborhood.
I just happened to be eating this turkey leg with my hand.
Bill Roper, the head of Flagship Studios and former Blizzard employee, has his own band called the what?
Poxy Boggarts.
Poxy Boggarts, and what kind of music does he play?
Basically drinking tunes. So they begin
like 16th century drinking tunes.
Yeah, kind of, but okay. also kind of like, you know, basically you could go to any Irish bar today and they perform and would sound normal.
Okay.
They kind of modified.
How
a
are they
bit.
Dressed? For their Ren Faire gig.
In period gear. Actually, I got some pictures, which I'll be happy to post on the GFW blog.
Put them up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nothing like little Waja.
So you got Bill Roper in a kilt, what, or something like that?
No,
or?
It was just not a kilt, but like, you know,
it was kiltish. Kilt's like it's a skirt.
No skirts involved. So that's how we got.
That's how we got to Ryan. Yeah. Ren Faire.
Okay, so Ryan, you were also at the Ren Faire?
No.
It's okay if you were. It's
although
right. Ren Faire's cool.
I did attend the last Ren Faire, but
doing
that's
legendary
because
legendary thread with you dudes again.
Oh God. So my girlfriend,
nothing wrong with Ren Faire.
My girlfriend likes Ren Faire, and she's a seamstress, so she's into the whole costume thing.
Uh huh.
So she's like, "Oh, we should make you a costume for Ren Faire."
Can I just ask? This might be a little bit personal. Let's just make sure we're clear here. This isn't you at home in drag, right? When you say your girlfriend?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
Oh, Jeff.
Wow. Was that not nice?
Just when Ryan starts talking more.
I know. I got him to open up, and now I've re-traumatized him.
All right, well.
How are your Halloweens that your girlfriend's a seamstress? Does she make you, like, dress up in full Waja regalia every year?
No.
Okay, no? Normally... So back to your real girlfriend. So she... I didn't mean to do air quotes for that. She does seamstressing for the Ren Faire, like every year. Or what?
I mean, she makes like her own costumes and stuff like that.
Okay, that's
so
cool.
She's trying to get me to
and
go
help
in
her.
A
and what would you?
Costumes.
What would she dress you up as?
I really don't know.
Why don't you ask her?
Yeah, you got to communicate better if you want
gotta
this relationship to work.
Get some.
I guess.
When she said that to you, you didn't say, like, what?
Well, I'm just like, well, I have to think of something.
I mean,
like
she must have said something like, honey, I could really see you as a...
You played Guild Wars all weekend. Putting a fucking diaper on for your girlfriend's not much different,
hell?
Dude.
You're not LARPing. Yeah. You're not dressing up as an orc. You're just, like, wearing, you know, gentleman's clothing.
Right. Renaissance dudes,
right.
Like leggings, and I don't know.
But you know, the Ren Faire is soon, so her family of geeks, so that's kind of like one of their yearly traditions.
So I think you should do this and then take photos.
I'm just visualizing Elvira cleavage, because like that's what the Ren Faire like outfits are all about, Elvira cleavage.
But that's just the men.
Yeah. It is.
I dressed up for a friend's Renaissance wedding once.
That kind of counts.
Yeah.
Renaissance wedding, huh?
I had a staff and everything.
Wow. So did they talk that way, like when they were doing their vows? I thee wed, oh fair wench. Was it like that kind of thing?
Close. That's quite bad.
It was Renaissance.
But there were people in like night outfits. They like walked underneath crossed swords and stuff like that.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. Beautiful.
It's like a wow wedding.
It's totally a wow wedding, but in real life. And they're the coolest people in the universe, so
That's cool.
I can't mock the Ren Faire thing.
Yeah.
That's some good shit.
Yeah.
I've been to Ren Faires.
You could spice up your life a little bit with that, Ryan.
Yeah, I've been. I'm not
embrace the Ren Faire.
Serious, man.
Next you can
the only problem with Ren Faire now as opposed to back in my day is now you got lots of there's like a big goth crossover.
Yeah.
That then wasn't going on as
like
much.
Like the vampire
back
shit.
Yeah.
I did notice one thing over the weekend. There were guys like
Werewolf.
Yeah. No, there were guys like ignoring the basic rules if there were any, and like some dude dressed up as a Klingon, some dude some guy dressed up as Link and another one as Zelda.
It just becomes an excuse because no local Comic Con, right. So they're just like, let's go fucking crash the Ren Faire.
Holy shit, I have this suit in my closet. I could put this on this weekend.
They should have
Klingon. They're like, someone's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, leprosy.
They should have like a no Klingon sign up front. You can't come in if you have a Klingon.
Just leave if you're a
Klingon. Let me explain that punchline since it was such a fucking failure. That the Klingon was trying to pretend he was a leper. And that's
I got it.
All right. We're good. All right, I'm out of here then. Oh. You should stick to fucking milk duds.
I thought it was funny. I just think that I was morally outraged that a Klingon would show up at a Ren Faire
thing. Wrong.
Yeah.
Like, what didn't do you they do that in an episode of Star Trek?
He dressed up.
Oh, yeah, they probably did.
Better than you.
Well, I'm sure that's happened repeatedly with the holodeck.
You're right. Last time I went to a Ren Faire, I was not dressed up.
Went through the trouble of taping some latex on his forehead.
You're right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel bad now.
Yeah, Klingon.
Silence in the podcast.
Now, I played some Team Fortress 2 and Left 4 Dead.
Did you?
Why didn't we
open the podcast with this? This is big PC news.
Yeah, because we already talked a little bit. Well, you know, I talked about the first segment on the 1UP show, but that was like before.
Oh, I see.
I went and played it again for like, had its, you know, usual Gamers Day or something like that. Mm-hmm. So
I see. Played a lot of that. Since you talked about it on the 1UP show, apparently it's not good enough for JFW Radio.
No, it's not. That's why I'm talking about it now. You got it wrong, Jeff.
Okay. Oh, by the way. I heard on One Up Yours this week that one of those One Up Yoursers said that the Half-Life story was like X-Files fan fiction.
Yeah. I'm not even going to defend that because I don't like – I really don't think that –
Let's get into it with those
When
guys.
We talk about the story for any game being good, it's always a relative remark.
Yeah,
about, like, saying
totally.
Like when you're talking about like a third grade class saying they're good at basketball or something.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, you mean for the third grade class.
Right.
And there's no doubt about it that, yeah, like – Half-Life's not Arthur Clarke or whatever, you know? But the problem I had with that is that I'm almost fucking positive Shane hasn't played. If he played some of Half-Life 1, he hasn't even touched Half-Life 2. And that's the rad part.
We're calling you out, Shane Bettenhausen.
But that's cool because, like, I make fun of, like, you know, what is that damn story with that Namco RPG that's got all the German subtitles.
Xenosaga.
Xeno Wankery. Like, I'll make fun of that, and I've never played it.
Right.
You know, but I'll admit, though, hey, this is another way of saying I'm making fun of, like, how douchey the names are and stuff and, like, trying, you know, the themes that
You should collect
invoke.
Examples of stories
technically, you don't.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, technically, you don't play Xenosaga because you actually watch the whole game.
Yeah, you just watch
It's like a half hour cutscene.
I've seen the pictures. It's more of that pedo shit from Japan.
It totally is.
It's straight up. It's more like little girls like, oh, it's a robot. Okay, that's cool.
Sexy robot, though.
Now I can tap it. Like, I mean.
Little girl robots with cleavage.
That's one of yours, guys.
No, but it's Nietzsche. Okay. My bad. So, yeah. I played a little Half-Life 2 and back on target.
Yeah.
Left 4 Dead, I'll try to do something, you know, real quick about some monologue and blah forever. But Left 4 Dead is as fun as it's ever been. You know, the past few times I played it, I think Sean, Darren, you guys have all tried it at one point or another.
Yeah.
Yes. Awesome.
The funny thing is I'm playing the same level all these times. And, you know, the game's got like, I don't know, like five missions or something. And what's awesome is that they're completely replayable. I mean, it does have the feel of a multiplayer game where you're like, it's about the experience of playing through it and the things that happen when I'm, you know, with other people, mm-hmm. other live players, and a few of the enemies are, you know, also human controlled. And that's awesome. I'm still skeptical about the role of playing the infected, you know, the boss uh-huh. infected, the four classes that you can choose, because it's very much like in the way that Crossing from Arkane Studios and also, you know, using Source Engine sounds, it's really a game about being the four human people, the four human players, and everything else is you're just sort of there to facilitate their experience. Mm-hmm. So that means challenging them, but not whooping their ass.
Oh, because you can't win.
Yeah, I mean, well, for what? Yeah, because it's kind of like the whole point of the game is for the humans to get through the level. And if you're just if it's just some like even you know it's not Soul Calibur where you need them to be like you know asymmetrically balanced with you. You know, they you need to whip their ass if you're a human with a gun. So the thing is getting in the mentality of saying, okay, that's fine. I want to play this role where I'm playing a role, you know, harassing people and maybe spending a whole lot of time spawning in and knowing that I can do some things. I mean, because people did get the jump on me. I mean, Valve had some of their employees, you know, or whatever, playing the infected there, and they did some great stuff. They got the drop on me repeatedly. One of the smokers, which has the long tongue, grabbed me from the other side of this car, and it pulled me up against the side of the car, and he couldn't. It's like it wasn't strong enough to drag me over the roof of the car, but it meant I was stuck against the side, mm-hmm. and I couldn't do anything until my teammates came and shot him. But that allowed all the AI zombies to rush me and chew the shit out of me. So while the guy doing that didn't get the kill, like he gets points. Like for every time you hurt someone on that side, so you feel like it's worth your time, you get points. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I think a lot more people are going to want to play the humans than they are the other. It's kind of like playing Marco Polo, you know. It's a great game to play as long as you're not the fool with his fucking eyes closed in Marco Polo, you know. I have high hopes for the game. It's a lot of fun. Team Fortress I played with a controller, which was a weird switch between Left 4 Dead. And it's great when you go like in that proximity in one room. You go from playing with the mouse and keyboard to playing with the controller in both games that were originally designed for controllers. And just being like, wow. I'm like hopeless with this thing nowadays. I suck. But it wasn't just me, you know. I mean, I was actually like for the competition there, I was doing well. But Half-Life 2, I mean, Team Fortress 2, I'm really excited for it. I can't wait. I have a feeling a lot of us are going to be playing it this week. Maybe by the time this podcast's out, you'll be playing it. But I have my lingering concerns, and this is another one of those reasons about why I think it's wise to take time with the game. Rather than, you know, just playing it for a little bit and coming up with some kind of authoritative or, you know, that's air quotes, authoritative assessment of it, is that I think we've talked about it over and over again. The fact that the grenades are gone, that you can't conk jump and stuff, I mentioned, but it's not just that. It's, you know, feigning death as a spy is really fun. And it's definitely taking that out doesn't make the game any better, really. I mean, strictly from the fun level, take aside balance or whatever other issues, because it's great when you go in, because, you know, in this was funny, too. In the environment we were playing was mainly console people. They're not used to the series. They don't know about it. So it was great. Right. It's like spy's delight. You just go in their base and why is this dude stabbing me?
It's like, just team killing.
Don't worry about it. Just die. Yeah. Dude. They just keep getting all of them that way. But, of course, on the PC, everyone knows to do a spy check on everyone. Every time you see a teammate that's running the wrong way, you shoot him in his fucking face. And then if he bleeds, then you shoot him again. And then if it's a teammate, you go, sorry, bro, go find a med station. So you need to feign death and you need all these other things because people are wise. And so you need to go to the battlements or wherever. And this isn't even the best example, but a bridge or something risky where corpses traditionally are, where everyone just sniper bodies pile up or, you know, soldiers on a bridge and stuff. And then when the H-dub guy runs by you, lumbers by you all slow, and then you rise up from the ground and stab him in the ass. So that stuff's fun. And I want to see if there are substitutes for it. It's not like I do not believe, you know, and I've clarified my perspective many times that this is from like a very diehard Team Fortress Classic player. I don't expect the game to be Team Fortress Classic. I understand it's going to be different, but I do hope that all the things that made it fun are back in some shape or another. So it's like, while I don't need to have a concussion jump, I want to have something, some other skill set that I can master and that the game gives more the more I put into it that way. Those were really important for the longevity of the game. The other concern is that they also help differentiate all the classes. And that's like one of their key things this time around. They want, mm-hmm. visually, they're also striking. You can tell from the silhouette, from the animations and everything. And also, you know, from the weapon set, this is this class and this is what he does. But so, because there's some overlap, you know, where the medic could be offensive and he was supposed to be a support class because he had a shotgun and this mobility and stuff. Now let's pare him down and make sure he's basically just like, the Ghostbusters gun that shoots health juice out of it now instead of, you know, sucks up ghosts or whatever. But the danger here, you know, where I'm going with this is the danger is that you have because now people are used to playing games like Halo and something where they're not class-based, and you have the ability to walk around a map and pick up different weapons and different tools, and you have a wide, you know, skill set that's available to you from the get-go. So in paring down the classes in Team Fortress, I'm concerned, and I think this will probably really be the case for some, at least for some console critics, is like, well, why is there an H-dub guy in Halo 3? I can just go pick up a turret. Why is there a demo man? I just go pick up the brute shot. You know, why is there a soldier? Likewise, I just pick up the rocket or the new flamethrower.
Right.
Or well, all these
but that's
things.
The whole premise of the game.
It is. But, I mean, that's a point to have, though. I mean, because people are like, well, I like the experience where I'm basically playing all these and switching not even just between deaths, but just like with a weapon like switch button.
Right,
hey,
right.
I've got the demo man on my back, and I've got the H-dub guy in my hands right now. I could drop that and switch over.
The trigger button.
Do all these other things. But so also part of the challenge, though, is just that getting those roles and, like, doing performing, you know, their duty well, just being, you know, getting used to it and doing stuff. But, again, in Team Fortress Classic, none of the scenario I just described now was an issue at all for me because all the secondary attributes gave it so much variety. The medic infecting enemies and laughing as they ran into their spawns and spread the cooties to their entire team, which would have been classic on Xbox, you know, because it would have been like whatever year it was all over again when – you know, people didn't understand the mechanics of the game. It was just amazing to mess with them. Or, you know, I mean, just all the other stuff that went with it. So we will see. But I do know I have fun every time I play it, even with the controller. It's got so much spirit. And, like, when you play it, even taking aside the fact that I know that I'm like, okay, this is, like, Dust Bowl. Like, this is a rad map. I know, like, exactly how it works and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's, like, it's really fun to play so far. But I'm concerned about the longevity. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
And mods, you know, on PC side, I you know, people are going to mod this stuff immediately. They're already probably, you know, talking about getting their old clans back together, and they're like, okay, well, first thing we're going to do is we'll just use the asset for one of the demo man's grenades, and we'll turn that into a conch, and we'll just figure out how to code with the physics to turn that into that. Not put the game back. Restore it to its old state, but say, okay, well, maybe this class is a little boring. Let's give him a frag grenade and just him and him alone, you know? So it'll be interesting. There'll be tons of options. I'm not worried about that. So yeah, both
well, I'm sure we'll keep talking about it on the podcast and in the magazine.
Start playing it. Articles as the mods keep
coming
like out.
I said, this week we could all be playing a whole lot of it. So
that would be good.
That would roll
on PC at last too.
Yay.
Woohoo. So you guys don't want to talk to me anymore.
What? Why? Why wouldn't we want to talk to you anymore?
I'm just playing. We're all quiet. Does that mean we're done?
Yeah, that was
a
lull. Yeah. All right, Ryan, you got anything more for us?
Half you guys are looking at your belly buttons.
No. No, I don't.
Will you tell us more about your upcoming cosplay transformation?
I don't have a cosplay transformation.
In the weeks
if it happens,
there will be
post-pitch.
No cosplay transformation.
If your girlfriend,
that's not bad. There's a lot of men who will go to they'll go to like Fredericks or Hollywood or something. And they'll say, "Hey, man, look at this like vampire outfit or nurse thing. I'm gonna buy this for my lady." And they take it home, and they're like, "And this is when you guys go, oh shit, he's telling us a story from his own life, but I'm not."
Oh, so this guy you knew.
Yeah, you got to try this on. I mean, this will just be fun. And those ladies are like slapping that shit out of their hand. I will not degrade myself that way. But you got a lady who's like, no, fuck that. I don't want you wasting your money. I'll make it. What do you want me to make? You need to get with that, dude.
Usually it's the other way around. I come home and my wife has bought me like a fireman outfit or something, you know, cowboy.
Yeah,
it's
same here too. Like the cowboy or or some of the other classics, the elephant trunks. You know which ones I'm talking about. You hang your zone in the elephant trunk.
Okay.
That shit's interactive.
We've hit rock bottom here.
You always say that, but that
we can go lower. Bottom.
That's what people want. That's what they need. Hey, yeah, I wanted to put this challenge out too.
Yeah.
The hot challenge. Like, if you listen to this piece of crap show.
Hey, no.
No, for real. If you listen to this trash.
Yeah.
And you like this trash. Then make an account at 1UP.com and post on the GFW thread. Just say, hey, I listen to the show. I might not post all the time, but I want you to know that I listen to the show.
Exactly like that.
They have to do it like that.
It has to rhyme.
They
can do whatever. Yeah. So now I want to see some more. I want to see some. So I know there's plenty of people out there, you know, like various random places I go and stuff, I'll run into people and they're quoting the show or something like that.
Yeah, don't be shy.
I know.
Come out and join us.
Show
love
some
us.
Support. If you got to do it just this week,
join the Nerd
then
Army.
You got to do it.
We need validation.
We'll hook up your account, give you picture posting privileges.
Weren't we going to do a pledge drive one week on here?
We were. That's why I wanted. I think
this is the pledge drive officially.
Most people probably turned off the episode by now, but we'll try it again next week. But yeah, like that's our drive. If you want to keep us on the air, and we're in danger of going off
next
the air,
week, we'll do this like every 5 minutes. Yeah. Or you know what? We'll be in the middle of a really cool discussion, and then we'll just stop.
Yeah.
And I'll say, "Well, that sounded great, didn't it? Yes. If you subscribe, you could hear that whole conversation." Next week.
And we'll give you this free tote bag for your donation.
We need 6,000 more callers.
6,000 posts, yeah.
6,000 more posts.
And so tell people, say, hey, man, these guys, they're going to get kicked off the 1UP Network, and, you know, we need to post and let it, you know, let people know that we like listening to them.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I'm making that part up.
Dude, you should have kept going with
that. No, but we want you to come and tell us.
Or we're
even if you hate us, we'll argue with you, and then you could
that's fun
tell,
too.
Tell Jeff
that's
on
fun
me.
Too.
Yeah.
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 Oh, yeah.
On that note,
what you said, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are we out?
We're out. We need to sing some more Pyramids.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a story for that. The reason I knew some fool in grad school who had that CD. Like, I got him to admit that he had it. And then not only that, he said he DJ'd a wedding and he played that shit.
Wait, what song?
That.
You asked.
Remember that shit? Imagine playing that. Like, what are you thinking? You're like, all right.
The all goth wedding.
Like, I was waiting. Like, he was just like feeling out the mood of the party. And he's like, it's time. Flips the CD, you know, because you know he doesn't have records. Press the CD, press play. Then that song I just sang comes on.
Okay, let's go out with that song. Give us another round.
That's a good one to do on Xbox Live. Do it. Spread it, people. Spread the word, and we out. We out. We out.